It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Libya appeals for an end to an international arms embargo. Libya Wednesday appealed to the UN Security Council to lift a four-year-old arms embargo on the North African country so authorities there can fight a growing Islamic State presence following Sunday's release of a video showing IS committing the mass beheadings of 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians. Libya's Foreign Minister Mohamed El-Dairi told the 15-member council the international community must ensure it shoulders its legal and moral responsibilities to support the restructuring of the Libyan army so it can take action. Speaking via teleconference from Libya, UN envoy Bernardino León told the council a political solution is the only answer.
The savage terrorist acts highlight once again the imminent danger confronting Libya, its people, and the wider region, unless there is a swift agreement among the main parties in the country on resolving the political crisis and bringing an end to the military and political conflict.
He said his indirect talks between the country's rival factions could produce results soon. The World Health Organization says West Africa recorded 128 new confirmed cases of Ebola in the week ending February 15th. That's the first decrease in 3 weeks. At the United Nations Wednesday, Dr. David Nabarro, the Secretary General's special envoy on Ebola, told the General Assembly the goal of zero Ebola cases by the three hardest-hit West African countries by April 15 can be achieved, but
they've got to ensure strong surveillance of the population. They've got to identify people with Ebola, to confirm the diagnosis, to quickly arrange effective treatment, to identify the people that are their contacts, and to keep those people under review for 21 days.
This is VOA News. U.S. negotiators are to join their European counterparts in the latest round of Iran nuclear talks in Geneva. Undersecretary of State Wendy Sherman travels to the Swiss city on Thursday. The U.S. and its so-called P5 plus one allies are facing a June deadline to work out an agreement with Iran to cut its uranium enrichment program in exchange for lifting sanctions that have impacted negatively the Iranian economy. Meanwhile, the White House acknowledged it's withholding some details of talks from Israel to prevent those details from being made public or distorted. White House spokesman Josh Earnest told reporters there's no question some of the things Israel has said about the U.S. negotiating position have not been accurate.
I think it is fair to say that the United States is mindful of the need to not negotiate in public and ensure that information that's discussed at the negotiating table is not taken out of context and publicized in a way that distorts the negotiating position of the United States and our allies.
Israel's government is strongly opposed to the nuclear agreement, fearing it will lead to a nuclear-armed Iran, whose leaders are on record as having vowed to wipe the Jewish state off the map. Iran insists its nuclear program is for peaceful means. President Obama Wednesday urged civic and religious leaders around the world to unite in the fight against the, quote, false promises of extremism and reject the notion that terrorist groups represent Islam.
We must never accept the premise that they put forward because it is a lie. Nor should we grant these terrorists the religious legitimacy that they seek. They are not religious leaders, they're terrorists.
Mr. Obama told delegates at the three-day conference the fight against extremism could not be won with military might alone. He appealed directly to prominent Muslims to do more to distance themselves from brutal ideologies. He said all individuals have a duty to, quote, speak up very clearly in opposition to violence against innocent people. Officials from 60 countries, as well as spiritual leaders and police officials from around the United States, are attending the White House summit, which is to end on Thursday. A Tunisian appeals court has handed down harsher sentences to 20 men for their participation in a 2012 attack on the U.S. Embassy in Tunis. They were earlier given lighter two-year suspended sentences by a lower court. Those now have been changed. All the convicted individuals will receive 2 to 4 year prison sentences. The embassy was stormed by a mob in September of 2012. A neighboring U.S. school was burned. Meanwhile, Tunisia is vowing a strong and violent response after suspected militants linked to Al-Qaeda killed 4 Tunisian police officers near the Algerian border. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Boko Haram threatens to disrupt Nigeria's March 28th election, but the military says the group is on the run.
A lot of offensive have started against every location where they are, and it's yielding results, and we are doing this in the spirit of very highly coordinated air and land operations.
Major General Chris Olukolade is the spokesman for Nigeria's military. Somali lawmakers positioned themselves for the 2016 election. Chaos erupted Wednesday in Zimbabwe's parliament. Libya's foreign minister urges the UN Security Council to lift arms embargo against his government.
We also reaffirm that if we fail to have arms provided to us and training provided for our army, this can only play into the hands of the extremists.
That's Libyan Foreign Minister Mohamed El Hadi Dari speaking Wednesday through an interpreter. And a music festival aims to bring healing and peace to the Eastern Democratic Republic Congo's city of Goma. The stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria delayed nationwide elections to give security forces a requested 6 more weeks to subdue Boko Haram in the northeast. Military gains announced since the delay have been punctuated by deadly bomb attacks and incursions by Boko Haram into neighboring countries. VOA West Africa correspondent Anne Loke has the latest.
Nigeria has about 5 weeks to go before March 28th nationwide elections, already postponed once for security reasons. Boko Haram had seized control of large parts of the northeast and was threatening the Borno state capital, Maiduguri. National security spokesman Mike Omeri tells VOA that at least 16 towns have now been retaken in the northeast.
As a result of the heavy bombardments and offensive by the military, the insurgents are scattered.
The military says it retook the strategic town of Monguno and 10 other communities since Monday. The news comes as Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau renewed the sect's pledge to disrupt elections. Boko Haram condemns democracy as usurping Allah's authority and wants to create an Islamic state. In a video released online Tuesday, Shekau says the elections, quote, will not happen in peace, even if that costs us our lives. Suicide bombings have spiked this month in northeastern Nigeria. The towns of Damaturu and Biu were each hit twice in the past week, killing at least 62 people, most of them civilians. A female suicide bomber attacked a presidential campaign rally in the city of Gombe on February 2nd. Militants stormed that city on February 14th. Nigerian troops pushed them back, but not before insurgents distributed leaflets warning villagers not to vote. In Tuesday's video, Shekau remained defiant in the face of the unprecedented regional intervention, now squeezing Boko Haram along Nigeria's borders. Chad, Cameroon, and Niger have launched air and land operations against militants in Nigeria. Those countries are reporting hundreds of militants killed and alleged supporters arrested. Boko Haram has hit back. Militants bombed a border town in Niger and have mounted several attacks against military installations and civilians in Cameroon. Boko Haram attacked inside Chad for the first time on February 13th. It's not clear which side has the upper hand. Analysts say the resurgence of asymmetrical attacks like suicide bombings shows just how hard it will be to secure the northeast ahead of the polls. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
The multinational offensive against the Boko Haram Islamist militant will not be deterred by threats from the group's leader to disrupt Nigeria's March 28 election, according to military spokesman Major General Chris Olukolade. His comments follow the latest Boko Haram threat to scuttle the election. Olukolade tells reporter Peter Clotty that prospects are good for a successful military operation against Boko Haram.
Well, consistent with the plan to ensure that there's heat on them from every part as we try to sweep them out of where they are having their activities prevalent. A lot of offensive have started against every location where they are, and is yielding results. And we are doing this in the spirit of very highly coordinated air and land operations. Each move of troops is backed by appropriate air strikes that have also been yielding good results. Further to that, we're also enjoying good coordination with the neighboring countries whose business is to ensure that there is no escape for them, even when they are under heat here. And everyone is watching his own side of the mission. A number of casualties have been suffered on their part, and we're having very minimum casualty on our part. So the whole thing is progressing as designed.
What do you see as the prospect of this renewed joint offensive coordinated with other neighboring countries to put pressure on these militants to prevent casualties on the unarmed civilians in the country and to restore the country's territorial integrity?
The essence is what you have just mentioned, to ensure that terrorists don't have a free rein to attack innocent civilians who have clearly been their target and occasionally to engage in daring attacks against security agencies. We believe that by the time this operation is over or concluded, this tendency should have reduced very, very much to enable normal socioeconomic activities as well as other activities, political or whatever, to take place in every part of our country. That's actually the target and the initial mandate.
Major General, will this military offensive put pressure on them to make sure that their threat to security is minimized?
That's the objective. Their threat to security and socioeconomic or political activities is minimized sufficiently that they cannot consider the degree of threat they constitute at the moment.
The militant leader has threatened to disrupt the elections. The military offensive, as you said, appear to be working very well. Will this continue, and how seriously do you take this latest threat from him?
Well, the threat could even be a reaction to this development, and it's not going to deter the move in any way. The move will continue, and the effort is to achieve the objective of incapacitating the group to the extent that they cannot be the nuisance that they have always been.
Major General Chris Olukolade is the spokesman for Nigeria's military. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Libya's foreign minister asked the UN Security Council on Wednesday to lift an arms embargo against his government to help it fight armed groups and Islamic extremists who are battling for control of the country and its oil fields. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
Minister Mohamed El-Hadi Dari told an emergency meeting of the 15-nation Security Council that Libya's legitimate authorities need the embargo lifted so they can rebuild the national army and its capacity to fight terrorist groups, including Ansar al-Sharia and Islamic State. He's heard here through an interpreter.
We also reaffirm that if we fail to have arms provided to us and training provided for our army, this can only play into the hands of the extremists. This will help ramp up their activities in Libya, and this will have a negative repercussion on the entire region and thereby global security.
He said Libya is not asking for international intervention to deal with these groups, but has asked neighbor Egypt for military support. Egypt has previously bombed militia strongholds in Libya, and on Monday, after Islamic State released a video showing the apparent beheading of 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians on a Libyan beach, carried out retaliatory targeted airstrikes over the eastern port city of Derna, which Islamic State seized late last year. Egyptian Foreign Minister Sami Shukri expressed support for the lifting of the arms embargo against the Libyan government and went further, suggesting a naval blockade to prevent militias and armed groups in areas outside government control from acquiring more weaponry. After the meeting, the minister told reporters that while Egypt fully supports ongoing UN efforts at an inclusive political dialogue among the Libyan parties, a political settlement alone would not eradicate the terrorists.
This is a fight against terrorism, and this is not a political dilemma that somehow will magically create a situation where terrorist activity on Libyan territory will disappear once that we have achieved success.
Minister Shukri said Council Member Jordan would circulate a draft resolution among members on Wednesday for discussion. It is expected to stress the need to provide support and assistance to the legitimate Libyan authorities and call for the lifting of the arms embargo against the Libyan National Army. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Batten in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 19th, and still to come, Monk Oman Sports and our Black History and African History Facts of the Day. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Somalia's parliament is showing an increased willingness to challenge the president and prime minister. While in the past, lawmakers have often rubber-stamped presidential initiatives, the new parliament is showing more independence. As Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, some observers say this is a political game by the executive and parliament to remain in power beyond 2016.
After more than 4 months of political wrangling, Somalia has a new 66-member cabinet. In an interview with VOA Somali Service, Somalia Prime Minister Omar Abdirashid Ali Shamake blamed differences between his predecessor Abdiwali Sheikh Ahmed and President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud for delaying the new administration. He says the problem comes from political division in the previous administration. He says a new system of power sharing is being created that is based on political alliances in parliament, not the usual clan-based power sharing. Mr. Shamake was appointed in December and was forced to twice revise his list of cabinet nominees by lawmakers who argued it did not reflect client dynamics and included people they blamed for political division. International Crisis Group Horn of Africa Project Director Kedric Bans says now that the cabinet is in place, he expects Somalia's political leaders focus strongly on the next elections.
What we have now is probably an agreement between the executive and the president and MPs, in so much as that they will work together to all come back in 2016 for another 5 years. So the elections that will take place are probably going to be very top-down, very much about nomination, about clan power, and about a sort of agreement between big political players to remain in the political game.
Under Somalia's federal charter, political power is dominated by four major clans and smaller influence given to minority clans. Under what is known as the 4.5 plan, an arrangement blamed for frequent political bickering and division. Earlier this month, EU Special Envoy to Somalia, Michel de Urso, told VOA that advisers and lawmakers are working on a democratic process not based on the 4.5 plan, but linked to the realities of the Somali population. UN Envoy to Somalia Nicholas Kay told the Security Council this month he's excited because this year will be decisive in how the country can become a unified, peaceful and federal state, but said he is worried about significant challenges and risks posed by greater delay and political bickering. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
There was chaos in Zimbabwe's parliament on Wednesday when acting speaker Mambel Chinumona tried to eject lawmakers from the opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, for protesting against the failure of some cabinet ministers to show up and respond to queries during the traditional Wednesday question time. Erwin Chifera of VOA Zimbabwe Service has details from Harare.
Those are opposition MDC officials demanding cabinet ministers come and answer questions in parliament. Only one minister, Joseph Made of Agriculture, was present when parliament business started, leaving backbenchers angry. The majority of the cabinet ministers were apparently attending a ZANU-PF Politburo meeting at the party's headquarters in Harare. But MDC lawmakers argued this is not the first time that ministers had failed to answer questions from their constituencies on Wednesdays. This led Harare Central lawmaker Murisi Zuzai of the Trangirai MDC to tell Ms. Chinomona that he was fed up by what he said was the cabinet minister's disrespect of the legislature as they continued to miss the weekly question and answer sessions. He said, despite several warnings, ministers have continued to defy parliament. Nelson Chamisa of Kwazana East and also of the Tsvangirai MDC formation then suggested that question time be stood over until the time more ministers would have arrived. Chinomona put Chamisa's proposal to the House and ZANU-PF lawmakers objected, leading to the commotion, which lasted for the first hour of Parliament's sitting time. Lawmakers submit questions seeking clarity from ministers on policy issues every Wednesday. Chaos then ensued and attempts by Chinomona to eject MDC lawmakers like Tapita Kumalo and Solomon Madzore were blocked by their colleagues who started shouting across the floor that the MPs will not leave the chamber. the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation, which beams Parliament Question Time live every Wednesday, went off air as the commotion continued and security personnel ordered journalists in the press gallery to switch off their cell phones. The journalists were told that they were not allowed to take pictures or use their phones in the gallery. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Several years ago, fed up with the violence engulfing their region, a youth group in Goma set out to hold a music festival for peace. The first attempt in 2013 was cancelled as mortars rained down on the city. But in 2014, 25,000 people came to Goma to hear their favorite Congolese artists play. Now, in its second year, the Amani Music Festival has started to attract some of the continent's biggest names despite recent clashes in the area. Hilary Hewler has more for VOA from Goma in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
The audience roars when Malian legend Habib Koyate takes the stage. The smoke machines fire up, and an impromptu conga line forms, while thousands of exuberant spectators eat, drink, and dance in the dust. Music festivals are popular across Africa, but in bruised and battered Goma, this is a scene few would have imagined possible. For decades, Goma has been synonymous with crises. Desperate refugees converged on the city after the Rwandan genocide in 1994. Various rebel groups have taken and retaken Goma in recent years, including M23, which was driven out of the area in 2013. But one ambitious youth group dared to imagine that their city could be different, and they seized on the idea of music. Last weekend's Amani Music Festival, now in its second year, has begun to attract some of Africa's biggest musicians. Vianney Bisimwa, one of the youth group's organizers, says they wanted to change the image of a town slowly clawing its way back to stability.
We go through war, and the war was really negatively impacted the promotion of culture. So the idea was, how can we try to change the way people see this town?
If the DRC is known for war, it's also famous for its music. And many local artists sing openly about the conflict. This allows people to process their feelings and to grieve, says Bisimwa.
Music is powerful in DRC. When people are tired, they go to dance. When people are angry, they dance or they sing how they are angry. And people believe in what they understand, in what they hear.
According to some locals, life in Goma has already gotten better.
Goma a changé. C'est une zone de paix. Et la paix, nous voulons tous la paix parce que...
Goma has already changed a lot from the days of M23, the man says. And people are hungry for peace. It's not always clear that Goma's making progress, says Bisimwa, with such tensions just beneath the surface. But peace, he adds, is a process. He hopes events like this will finally get people talking about the past and thinking about the future. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Goma.
Time now for Daybreak Africa. Spokesman here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with football. Sam Diallo scored for Guinea in the first half before Nigerian captain Kelechi Nwankwo converted a penalty as Nigeria and Guinea settled for a 1-1 draw at the Africa Under-17 Championships in Niamey, Niger on Wednesday. Meanwhile, Patson Daka and Wayne Museba scored in the first half before Malik Gonda replied with a consolation goal as Zambia edged tournament hosts Niger 2-1 in the other group A tie. After two preliminary round matches, Nigeria and Guinea have 4 points each. Zambia has 3 while Niger has no point. Today, Thursday, in Group B action, South Africa play Mali before defending champions Ivory Coast face Cameroon. In athletics, the Africa 20-kilometer race walking champion Lebohang Shange of South Africa has his sights set on a groundbreaking achievement at the IAAF World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China, later this year. He says retaining his 10-kilometer race-walking crown at the Best Med Tax Race at the High Performance Center at the University of Pretoria here in South Africa on Saturday marks a key step towards his goal.
For me, doing best mate, like checking how far my speed is, how I'm in best shape for Europe, because I'm leaving the next 1 month. I'm leaving to Switzerland for my racing, for my IAAF leagues.
Now that you are an African champion, you've competed at the highest level, what are your plans?
Okay, my goal, and I'm hoping and I'm praying God to help me and my training to help me, I'm hoping to be in the top 10 in the world champ. That will be a great achievement. I'll be the first African guy, South African person to be in the top 10 in the world champs. And my preparation, I want to go to Europe, the European leagues, see how far I am, come back home, try to get some high altitude place to train to, and I hope from there everything will come.
That was Lebohang Shange, the African 20-kilometer race walking champion, speaking at the University of Pretoria in the South African capital, Tshwane. Finally, in cricket, Zimbabwe play United Arab Emirates at the ICC Cricket World Cup in Nelson, New Zealand, today, Thursday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 19th. On this day in 1942, the Tuskegee Airmen, the black servicemen of the U.S. Air Force, was created at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. During World War II, blacks were not allowed to learn to fly fighter planes because some believed they lacked the intelligence, skills, and patriotism. But a young black student at Howard University in Washington, D.C., sued the U.S. government to begin training black pilots at black schools. And so, a flight school was started at Tuskegee. A squadron of black pilots from there fought in World War II and received honors for their bravery. Also on this day in 1919, the Pan-African Congress, organized by W.E.B. Du Bois, met in Paris. There were 57 delegates, 16 from the United States and 14 from Africa. Bliss Diagne of Senegal was elected president and Du Bois was named secretary. On this day in 2002, Vonetta Flowers became the first black gold medalist in the history of the Winter Olympic Games. She was also the first American woman to win a gold medal in bobsled. Vonetta, the Brick person, and her partner, Jill Barkin, won the gold medal in the 2002 Winter Olympics in Park City, Utah. On this day in 2010, Tiger Woods, then the world number one golfer, talked publicly for the first time since the scandal surrounding his private life erupted in 2009. During his press meeting, Woods admitted that he had been unfaithful to his wife by having extramarital affairs. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 19th. Congratulations to Stanley Aporotu of Warri, Delta State, Nigeria, Timothy Banda Mambi of Lusaka, Zambia, and Bennett Badiakun of Dansone Community in Accra, Ghana. You are the winners of our February 18th question. Where in Washington, D.C. was Miriam Anderson denied permission to sing in 1939? The answer, Constitution Hall. Now here is our question for today, February 19th. Who is the first African-American student to enroll at the all-white University of Mississippi in 1962? Once again, who is the first African-American student to enroll at the all-white University of Mississippi in 1962? Send your answers to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The head of Nigerian militant group Boko Haram has threatened to disrupt the country's elections, which were already postponed until next month because of violence. That is it for this Thursday, February 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotin and Ricky Stryak, as well as host editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Batty in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza is bidding for a third term in June's election. We'll discuss why the move is stirring controversy. That's next time on VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kHz and 15580 kHz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.